Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Thinking about your summer body? First off, every body is a summer body. But let's talk diet, the American diet specifically. Here's WCCO in Minneapolis.
Heart attacks, stroke, heart failure. From our food.
According to the Centers for Disease Control, more than 40% of adults in the U.S. are obese, and more than 30% are considered overweight. The Midwest is among the regions of the country with the highest prevalence, though in Minnesota, the rate has been dropping slightly after increasing for decades. Experts say that may correlate with the rising use of GLP-1 medications, but it's not clear if that's the cause. Still, a trip through most any grocery store reaffirms ultra-processed foods are a mainstay of the typical American diet. Brittany Vincent is a dietitian at Nutritional Weight and Wellness in St. Paul.
You know, these foods are convenient, they're everywhere, they taste good, and so individuals are over-consuming them. So I'm not talking about real carbohydrates and avoiding fruits and vegetables, but it's these ultra processed carbohydrates that are going to turn to glucose very quickly in our blood. And the health outcomes, these foods and consuming them consistently over time, they're going to contribute to inflammation in our body. That can manifest as joint pain, you know, high cholesterol's inflammation, high blood pressure's inflammation. They contribute to weight gain. And what I see too, just working with people individually, is it often shows up as fatigue, brain fog, the aches and pains. That's a big one. It can be disruptive to sleep. And I think as well, the more we eat of these, the more we want.
Yet the world's major food manufacturers continue to profit from the sale of ultra-processed products like snack foods, soda, candy, and some lines of frozen meals marketed as healthy. According to the public health journal Globalization and Health, ultra-processing is a core strategy for maximizing company profits and has been since the process was first introduced in the late 19th century.
Cheerios.
That said, some so-called big food industry leaders have been responding to public health concerns, including Minnesota-based General Mills. The company has removed artificial petroleum-based dyes from its school food service products and plans to remove them from all food products by the end of 2027. In a statement provided to WCCO Radio, the company says it has been committed to food safety for 160 years and has been nourishing families with foods that are delicious, accessible, and meet a range of health needs, and they will continue to do just that. However, in 2024, Consumer Reports and other watchdog groups called out General Mills for plastic chemicals known as phthalates in some of its food lines, such as Annie's, Yoplait, Progresso, and Cheerios. Phthalates can disrupt the body's endocrine system and interfere with the production and regulation of some hormones. They're not intentionally added to food, but are believed to leach into food through manufacturing equipment like PVC tubing and conveyor belts. A General Mills spokesperson says the safety of their food is and always has been their top priority, and they stand by its quality. At the federal level, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. recently outlined new dietary guidelines that for the first time advise against highly processed foods.
We're seeing in our population people who are obscenely obese and at the same time malnourished.
At David Kessler's and others' urging, Kennedy is also working to get rid of a federal exemption enacted by Congress in 1958 known as GRAS, G-R-A-S, in the food industry, meaning generally recognized as safe. GRAS allows food companies to independently verify the safety of their ingredients without government oversight. Hence the boom in local farmers markets. A recent University of Wisconsin Extension study showed there were more than 8,700 recognized farmers markets in the U.S., with 41% of Americans saying they visit one at least six times a year, and 75% reporting farmers markets help them eat healthier diets. At the Linden Hills Farmers Market in South Minneapolis on a recent Sunday, Andre LaSalle was selling pasture-raised meat and eggs from his Forage-scape farm in Onamia.
What have you been seeing maybe in the last couple of years about people's habits toward trying to eat better and supporting local farmers and eating organic or whole foods at least? Are you seeing an increase in that?
I think so. I think a lot of people are aiming to do it for community resilience, trying to make their food chain a little shorter, doing it for their own health, and then I think too for environmental reasons as well.
What are some of those environmental reasons?
Water quality is a big one. Big ag and lots of row crop production can sometimes affect like nutrient runoff into streams and rivers and whatnot. Also, too, there's effects from like CAFOs, factory farm operations. So I think some people are trying to choose to spend their food dollar a little more local with like intentional farms.
What do you think the average person doesn't know that they need to know? Like what's been overwhelming to people who maybe don't come to a farmer's market and don't realize what they're buying at the grocery store sometimes?
I think marketing is a pretty big screen that's pulled over people's eyes, all of ours, in every facet of our life, but especially food. There's lots of stuff big companies can get away with advertising as being homegrown or farm fresh when it's actually in industrial production. So marketing is a big one to look out for.
Across the parking lot, Menominee, Wisconsin farmer Els Dobrik didn't have much fresh kale or other produce left. She says she's noticed a big jump in awareness when it comes to eating locally sourced, organically grown, real food.
I think people, once they think about what they're putting in their body and what is put on the things that they're ingesting, I think they kind of start to think about it. And I think people also like recognize this quality. They recognize that they can't get this anywhere else. Like, they just can't.
It's right out of the ground,
yeah,
seriously.
Yep, it's been harvested so fresh, and it also, like, because it was harvested a day or two before and cooled properly and stored properly and brought to market, they can buy it, and it doesn't go bad on them. It hasn't been on a truck for 3 weeks.
From an overall health and awareness perspective, things are looking up. And dietitian Brittany Vincent says it's consumers who are driving that change.
I am seeing more kind of healthier convenience options like riced cauliflower in the frozen section, things like that. And we're seeing less of those refined oils in products. That's like the seed oils, soybean, canola, cottonseed. So you look at the salad dressing aisle, and you know, even 5 years ago, there were not that many options that had like an avocado oil or an olive oil base. But now you go there and you might find a few options, a few different brands. And I do think that that's just consumer driven because people are more aware. They're wanting to eat more real food. They're trying to avoid these additives. And I'm hopeful that that's just going to continue to change over time.
Laura Oakes, News Talk 830 WCCM.
We're switching gears, a big switch, to heroes. What makes a hero? Here's KCBS in the Bay Area.
Often, these heroes look just like our neighbors. ABC News correspondent Martha Raddatz has covered America's war since 9/11. She shares these stories in her new book, The Hero Next Door. And Martha joins. What do you hope readers will take away from these dozen stories in your book?
I think what I want them to do is know these men and women. And these are men and women, some of them I have known more than 20 years post 9/11. And they are, for me, a gift. They are inspiring. They have done amazing things in the military. And those who have since gotten out have continued to serve in some way or another. And they're inspiring human beings to me. They are people who, the people I've known more than 20 years, I covered a battle in 2004, talked to these men after the battle, And today they continue to find purpose in their lives, which is very hard sometimes for some veterans, as many people know. Others have been injured badly, emotionally, physically. They have gone on to do inspiring things. So I think what I want people to take away is that these are people we can all look to. This isn't just a book about the military, and it's certainly not about how you feel about war or politics. It's about humanity and looking at people who have continued to fight for purpose, fight to make the world a better place. And I guess that is really the heart of this message, this 9/11 generation of families, and some of them back home, have done extraordinary things. There are caregivers, there's a Gold Star family. It's a real inside look at what's happened since the day they served.
I think it's important to remember with the heroes that you profile in your book, these are people who volunteered for service and, you know, are finding themselves, if they're in the reserves, uprooted from their families and their jobs. They weren't drafted. They volunteered for this.
That is such a good point. And exactly. They have volunteered to do this for us. And I think that's what I want people to remember. These are not people who are political at all. They take an oath to support and defend our country. And that is what they do and have done. And that oath is in the back of their head still today. Many of them are out. Many of them are doing other extraordinary things. But they took an oath to serve the country, to support and defend the Constitution. And that is what they do every day. And that's what drives them. And that's what drives them to do better and try to help others. And they are people, I mean, the title there, Steve, it's the hero next door. I can walk around with these guys. And I'm in New York right now. And a couple of them were here last night. And you can just walk the streets of New York, and it kind of makes me smile and think, these people have no idea that this is Josh Webster. And 10 years ago, he was dangling from a helicopter trying to rescue a fellow soldier while RPGs were flying and gunfire, and he still made his way down a cliff. 25 feet the rotors were from that cliff's edge, that stone edge, but Josh was determined to pick up his fellow soldier. And Josh today is still serving, and no one had any clue. So I love the fact that they are really, truly heroes among us. They can be your neighbor. They can be anybody at your grocery store. And I just think they deserve our respect. And as you point out, as volunteers.
Martha, you call the 9/11 generation every bit as inspiring as the greatest generation. Have we expanded our definition of an American hero? Is it now much more, and I'm going to date myself, much more than men raising a flag on Iwo Jima when we define an American hero?
Look, those men who raised that flag on Iwo Jima are true American heroes. The greatest generation is the greatest generation, but these guys, this 9/11 generation is no less great because they do the same thing. They follow orders. They try to make lives better. They try to protect us. So I think the definition of the hero in that sense is the same, but I think I want to expand that to say there may not be that iconic photograph of what happened on Iwo Jima. There are so many people whose stories we don't know, who are the quiet heroes. And those are the people that define heroism as well.
In our last 30 seconds, Martha, who is the hero next door for?
It is for all of us. These people have been such a gift to me to know all these decades. I have a connection with them, clearly. I bonded with them because some of them, I was there on the worst day of their life, which they say is the best day because they lived. So I think the message I want is this is a gift for you, everyone out there, to read about them because you will be inspired, I promise.
When you're looking for a hero, there's almost always one around. Consider, for instance, a Detroiter who went back to school 50 years after dropping out and finished. Here's WWJ.
It's been a long journey for Darlene Lee. She is going to graduate from high school in a few days, and the grandmother and cancer survivor is a Detroiter. and will be getting her high school diploma at the Tri-County Educational Center in Ferndale. And she will also be the graduation speaker. And Darlene, why has it taken you so long to get here?
I had to grow up, for one thing. And once I had dropped out of school at the age of 15, and I started having babies. I had four boys, and working and getting my own home and trying to do better for myself and my kids. And I wanted them to realize that it's never too late to complete anything that you set your mind out to do.
And so you dropped out of school at 15, and that was, yes. What year was that roughly?
The 70s, maybe?
In the 70s, okay. So you raised your kids, and do you have grandchildren yet?
I have 21 grandbabies and 7 great-grandbabies.
Oh, my. And then you've also...
Yes,
oh, wow. So you're going to be speaking at graduation, and what is your message to graduates?
You're never too old to complete anything. Never too old. Go for your goal, and everything will be okay. I had been sick for a while. My determination was to go ahead and finish school. I wanted my high school diploma. I didn't want no GED, which I could have been gotten that years ago. But I wanted my high school diploma. I wanted to walk across the stage. That was my goal that I set out. Through everything that I went through, 6 heart attacks, life support, bypass, stents all in my heart, in my legs and everything. It's been a hard journey for me. It's been a hard journey. I spent almost a year in the hospital. I wound up having a bone disease. It's been hard for me. It's really been hard. Termination.
You also had cancer, too.
Yes, I had cervical cancer. I've been cancer-free for over 40 years now.
How's your heart?
My heart is what it is.
Now, what do you want to do next, now that you're getting your diploma?
That's a good question. Well, I'm not able to work because of the vascular disease that I have. But I want to do something. I don't want to just sit back. Nah, I want to go ahead and go forward.
Well, how excited are you to graduate?
I'm very excited. I am very, very excited.
Now, are a lot of family members coming to graduation?
As far as I know, yes.
And so you've got 4 sons and a ton of grandkids. Do you still have a husband? Do you have a husband at all?
Yes, I have my husband. We have 34 years married.
Well, congratulations. That's quite an accomplishment. And congratulations on your graduation. We've been talking with Darlene Lee. She's 69. She completed her high school work when she was 68, but she's getting her diploma on Sunday. And she's a cancer survivor, and it's been a 50-year journey to get her diploma as she raised her 4 sons. And now she's got a whole bunch of grandkids. So congratulations to her.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.